Alright, let's give credit where it's due. This is a cool intro.
I have to say, I was really, really unimpressed with this video. I mean, some of these points you made, Academic Agent, were just so bad that I think I must be bonkers. So, no offense, obviously, but let's see if I'm right or I've missed something and I'm about to make a complete fool of myself. So,
I quickly want to address Dil Tom's claim that British prosperity was built on protectionism from the 14th century onwards.
So one of his first points is that I said the growth of Britain was built on protectionism, which isn't a position I really hold. I simply said that Britain grew while having protectionist policies in place. So rather, it was built under protectionism, not on it. And there are so many other variables that determine economic growth and trade policy, so I would never be that absolute from just looking at these kind of historical correlations. Now, another reason that distinction is important is because tariffs are seldom justified along the lines of increasing gross domestic product or maximizing surpluses, but rather as a means of maintaining sovereignty.
So when you said in the first video that the data backs you up on this, what you actually meant was that it's nothing to do with the data. You're making a political argument, not an economic argument.
Mercantilism and even just plain protectionism often sees economics as being subject to power analysis and the state's expansionary nature, just like any other political matter. But let's look at the first bit of data he pulls out.
You can see that there was indeed overall GDP growth during this period, modest at first, but then accelerating as we get into the 19th century and the era of free trade.
Okay, as I said in my video, the era of free trade, as it were, the point where all tariffs were abolished in Britain, happened in 1865. The average tariff rate at 1820, so the second last point on the x-axis of this graph, was 55%, which made Britain one of the most protected nations in the world at this time.
Okay, so I'm confused. You said you were making a political argument, not an economic argument, but now we're going to go back to talk about GDP. Got it. Let's take a little closer look at this a table that he keeps on showing here. Let's have a look at it. So there's a lot of information that this table is not showing. First of all, the source is a historian called Paul Bayrock, who wrote a book in 1993 called Economics and World History, Myths and Paradoxes, in which he sought to challenge the idea that free trade historically led to periods of economic growth. So basically, this is a biased source. You'll note that the sources I used were not biased. They were all these kind of old school Cambridge statistician type macro economists, not necessarily people on the free market side of things at all. One of the issues that we have here is that this data set seems rogue to me. These numbers do not tally with the numbers that I showed. If you remember, I showed this graph here when I was looking at UK tariffs, and I also showed French tariffs, and I specifically mentioned that they never quite reached zero. Look at the tariffs there. You know, they're never quite zero, are they? And looking at this period after the Napoleonic Wars, from 1820 to 1848, even though we're still technically not quite in what I was calling the era of laissez-faire, I did mention in the first video that the tariff rate was falling. Now look at that. I'm going to put two red lines either side of it in this period. You can see that the tariff rate was clearly falling during that period. And looking at the GDP per capita rate, you can see that that clearly rises from 1820 to 1848. So, you know, if you wanted to draw a direct correlation between falling tariff rate and rising GDP per capita, you could do that. Let's carry on.
So what we are looking at right now is an unprecedented amount of growth in Britain, all occurring under heavy levels of protectionism.
Protectionism of the wool trade from foreign producers was largely a catalyst of war, especially between England and the Netherlands, hence the near constant Anglo-Dutch wars of the 17th century, which was, of course, a net loss to the economy and not a reason for its growth.
Okay, so here Academic Agent claims, I kid you not, that the Anglo-Dutch wars happened because of protectionism.
So I don't really understand why he's laughing here, because anybody with even the slightest acquaintance with the history of this period knows that the Anglo-Dutch wars were explicitly wars over the commercial rivalry between the two countries. They were explicitly trade wars. Here is Walter Raleigh during the reign of James I in the early 1600s echoing some popular sentiments. This is a book of his called A Clear and Evident Way for Enriching the Nations of England and Ireland and for Setting Very Great Numbers of Poor on Work. Okay, and this is an early version of protectionism, as you'll see. Not so ever a dearth of wine or corn here or other merchandise, but forthwith the embedders, Hamburgers and Hollanders, out of their stores laid 50, 100 or more ships, dispersing themselves round about this kingdom, and carry away great store of coin and wealth for little commodities in those times of dearth, by which means they suck our commonwealth of our riches, cut down our merchants, and decay our navigation, not with their natural commodities which groweth in their own country, but the merchandises of other countries and kingdoms. Therefore it is far more easy for us to serve ourselves, hold up our merchants, increase our ships and mariners, strengthen the kingdom, and not only keep our money in our own realm, which other nations still rob us of, but bring in there who carry ours away, and make the bank of coin and storehouse to serve other nations as well and far better cheap than they in England. Now, with Walter Raleigh and others like him talking like this in the early 1600s, is it any wonder that by 1652 we had the first Anglo-Dutch War? And this war explicitly started because England instituted the 1651 Navigation Act, which aimed at barring the Dutch from involvement in the English sea trade. It's explicitly a trade war. So I don't understand this smug laughter from True Dilton. This is just commonly established historical fact. Let's carry on.
But clearly the protectionist policies between the two empires was merely one manifestation of a growing rivalry, in this case over the status of being the largest trader with Asia, that would eventually erupt into a military conflict, this being in stark contrast to Academic Agent's idea that countries will simply just want to go to war with countries that they aren't trading with. So no, instead, states are expansionary in nature and will require as many resources, both in the material, fiscal, and social sense, that can aid their expansion, and economic policy is no exception.
Okay, let's just accept his premise that nation states, by their very nature, want to keep on growing. That is, they want to keep on expanding the amount of resources that they have to facilitate their own growth. There are really only two ways of going about getting more resources. The first way of going about it is to trade. That is, you give up some of your things in order to get other things in return. Or the second way is simply to take it. Now, if you're not going to trade with another nation and you opt for the second option of simply taking it, it invariably leads to war, doesn't it? I'm not convinced that Dilton is truly thinking about this. I mean, Bastiat famously said, "Trade barriers constitute isolation. Isolation gives rise to hatred. Hatred to war, and war to invasion. And the logic is clear. There's only two ways of growing. One is through trade, the other is through plunder. It's exactly the same in domestic, in the domestic situation. Either you can grow prosperity by producing things that people want and selling them, or you can simply take them, which is the socialist way of doing things. It's exactly the same. The allocation of scarce resources don't really change from historical... There seems to be this idea that in different historical periods, different rules apply. It doesn't. We're talking about resources. You can either take them through force, or you can trade. If you cut off yourself from trade, you're putting yourself into a situation where you're bound to be on a collision course. This is not up for debate, I don't think. Does anyone disagree with this? How can you disagree with it?
As we proceed, I want to compare three distinct periods.
Okay, so here are some things you will notice about this era of protectionism that really skews the data for Academic Agent. Firstly, he pins the beginning of it at 1919, where the tariff rate in Britain averaged 0% and would only raise by 5% over the next 6 years.
Now again, I don't know what this data is he's drawing from, but it's not the same data that I've seen. Take a look at this graph. I'm going to put a little red triangle around the what I'm calling the era of protectionism here. Can anybody at home tell me why I might be calling this the era of protectionism? That's right, it's because tariffs were very high between the wars. And you can see that they fell drastically after 1950. He asked me later on in the video, why is it that I wasn't looking at the 50s and the 60s and the 70s as an era of protectionism? It's because trade was relatively free in the post-Bretton Woods, the post-1945 world, where America essentially bankrolled defense for Europe, and there was very free trade after that point. There were different people doing various forms of government protection, but it tended to be in the realm of domestic policy. So, for example, in Britain, it was the government literally buying and owning and running whole industries like the coal industry or the steel industry, or they would heavily subsidize different industries in order to protect them. So the protectionism was there, but it was coming in a very different form. It was coming in domestic rather than explicit tariffs. Okay, now he goes on to talk about the Great Depression, which is a topic I really wanted to steer clear of in the first video, because it's a whole can of worms. It's so sort of complex, massive topic. You know, people like Murray Rothbard, Milton Friedman, they devoted their careers to, they wrote whole books about this topic. It's, you know, and the causes of it are, it's a different video for a different time. Incidentally, I probably will one day make a video on how FDR is one of the worst presidents ever when it comes to economic policy. But anyway, one of the things that I haven't talked about is the USA. Now, you'll notice from this graph that the USA had quite high levels of protectionism and very high tariff levels in the 19th century, and then they dropped them drastically in the 20th century. Now, obviously, the USA had extremely free markets within the borders of the United States, between the different states. There was a lot of commercial activity that went on. But with other nations, the USA was pretty isolationist in the 19th century. But let's have a look at GDP growth versus tariffs again. So this is a US GDP over time, and you can see that after 1945, there is a very, very, very sharp increase. Now, partly that's obviously as a result of being the global superpower, the fall of the British Empire, the fact that they bankrolled Europe with the Marshall Plan. All of these political factors do come into it, but you will also note that since 1945, they've had incredibly low tariff rates. I showed you earlier on the correlation between declining tariffs and rising GDP in the United Kingdom's example, and now I'm showing you exactly the same correlation at a different time in history for the USA. So, you know, it's difficult to overlook data as emphatic as this. I think I'm going to leave it there. Diltom did go on to talk about some other things, but I think I addressed the main points. And this will probably be the final chapter in this little back and forth between us, unless he wants a live debate. I hope people have enjoyed it. Till next time.
And a very special thanks to Andrew, Sir Percy Blakeney, The Crimson Satyr, Binary Surfer, Ginger Bill, Holy Spatula, Hornito Jones, Kuzga, Michael Burt, Stephen Thomas, Time Stealer, Tragic Vision, Blake Barrows, and Edward Darra.